you have a problem with God, you've probably failed to understand the quality of your relationship with Him. Your mind isn't on who He is. What is our problem? First problem is we don't remember God's character. We're dealing with a God who He'll never cast us off forever. It says, has His promise failed? Have you actually accused God of failing in His promises to you? I'm looking at what I don't think He did for me. Well, how about taking God at what He promised to do, not what I ask Him to do?
Today on the Songtime broadcast, we're continuing our summer psalm series. This message from my late great mentor, Dr. Colin Smith, will talk about Psalm 77, a psalm that deals with a lot of our own angst and struggles and wondering if God actually hears our prayers while also teaching us how to pray. But first, we're joined by Gavin Ortland as we talk about doing theological triage and finding the right hills to die on. The many voices are coming together for that one message. I'm your host, Adam Miller. You're listening to Songtime Radio. When I was a kid growing up in the church, we used to talk about this joke that if you put 10 people on a committee, you'd come out with 11 different opinions. And although it's hilarious, we all know it happens to be true. That's what makes it funny, because the more people you meet, the more opinions you're going to hear. It seems that even if we try to be exclusive and get into a church that thinks just like us, that holds to all of the doctrines and all of the positions and statements that we hold to, and then you get in deeper into that church and you put all of those people onto a committee, they're going to find ways to disagree. That's just the nature of humanity. Well, how do we balance all of that? How do we make sense of the fact that there are different doctrines out there with people that we consider brothers in Christ? Our motto is many voices, one message. But amongst those many voices, there are a lot of different opinions. Well, our guest today is Gavin Ortland. He's written a book called Finding the Right Hills to Die On, The Case for Theological Triage. And Gavin, you write about this need for us to kind of understand the differences between doctrines that are essential and doctrines that are ones that we can be charitable about. But you write about it from your own perspective. So tell our listeners how you came about in thinking in this way and why you wrote this book. What was going on in your own life?
Yeah, the short version is there were just some secondary doctrines where my own personal study led me to a position that was inconvenient, in terms of my context. Okay. And so I was in a wonderful Presbyterian context from which I benefited so much, but I became Baptistic in my view of baptism. And then I share all these in the book, in the context of ordination, my views on the end times were different from some of the pastors who were overseeing my ordination process. Not the central things of the end times, but some of the details. And so I think there were a few other episodes too I mentioned in their book where just what I've experienced is if you just think for yourself and study, usually there will be times where you arrive upon a view that is inconvenient to hold based upon the context that you're in. And so I think what drew me into this topic was not anything theoretical, but just the practical reality of on the ground functioning as a pastor within evangelicalism. You bump into these issues where, we've got some differences on secondary or tertiary doctrines. So now what do we do? And I don't see any way to avoid having to face those questions. And I'll say one other thing, and that's my study of church history, which is a great passion of mine, has made me aware that there's some ways where a default sort of assumed normal view within evangelicalism on a secondary or tertiary doctrine can be different from what most Christians in church history would have thought. That's especially true in the end times conversations, for example. So that's another layer of I think speaks to the need for careful study to make sure we're drawing the boundaries in the right place, because sometimes we can exclude other Christians without even realizing that it's unhelpful to do so.
Mm. I grew up in a very, very conservative church, and you understand probably where I'm coming from in that regard. And as a result, we didn't fellowship much at all outside of our particular denomination. We were very closed off. We had five Baptist churches all in the same street, and we didn't even play softball with the other churches. We were very, very exclusive. And I came out to New England. I grew up in the Midwest, and I came out to New England. And I realized I was all alone. There was no one like me in anywhere within the vicinity of where I'm living now. And I started reaching across the aisle, reaching across to go into various churches. And I found my whole trajectory changed drastically. But ultimately, it came out of a result of the fact that we're really isolated out here in New England and the Northeast. Our bonds and relationships are really about those who reach back. And I've really had to work through a lot of these issues that were really kept on a shelf. They were pristine. They were precise, but they were on a shelf and they had collected some dust. I had to take them off and really work through them and realize that a lot of them weren't not as essential to the core doctrines as I had originally thought.
I've had a very similar experience to you serving in California, especially the part of California that I'm located, the Ojai Valley, where it is not a spiritually vibrant place with lots of large churches. It's a very spiritually needy place. And one of the things I'm grateful for about that is it's forced me and encouraged me to have, I just before this conversation came from a meeting with some of the other pastors in Ojai, and we've developed this wonderful sense of cohesion. We're doing an event this Saturday night at our church, a revival discussion over dinner, and we're all partnering together for that. And I think it's just this sense of when you're in a more challenging environment, you can't afford to fight on the wrong hills. Mm-hmm. You sort of need to partner more. When you're living within this big umbrella of Christendom, then you can feel the pressure less acutely about our need to partner together and unify. And so that may be one of the positives of being in a context like this, because it is good to wrestle with those questions. It's there's something that doesn't feel right if you've got the Baptist church on this block, the Methodist church on this block, the Presbyterian church on this block, et cetera, and they're not coordinating or talking in any way, and there's just an aloofness from each other. It doesn't seem like that's what Christ would want for us.
And it's a lot easier to paint your enemies out as through these straw man arguments until you've actually interacted with them. When you sit down and actually have conversations and you work through some of these issues, you find out that your characterization of them is probably not as accurate as it was in your mind before you started talking.
Yeah, I've been discovering that over and over on my YouTube channel as I do dialogue, even with the non-Protestant traditions where our differences are more serious, and yet there can still be a tendency to caricature. And mm-hmm. sometimes we don't actually have an accurate, sympathetic understanding of the other side.
We've been talking with Gavin Ortlund about his book called Finding the Right Hills to Die On, The Case for Theological Triage. You can find out more information about his book by giving us a call. It's 508-362-7070, or you can head over to our website at songtime.com. And as is always the case here, you can hear much more of the conversation online. I'm still kind of mulling over this conversation. There's much to be considered and much to be thought about, especially as I consider my own need to balance out my doctrine with my charity. A lot to be said there. Again, give us a call, 508-362-7070. Well, today we're continuing our Summer Psalm series, and today we find ourselves in Psalm 77. This is a psalm that resonates with me. As I mentioned, all of the psalms here in Book 3 are really written from a priestly perspective, a minister's perspective, a pastoral point of view. This one is written by Asaph to Jeduthun, two priests that were contemporaries at the time. They would have been assigned by David to sing in the temple and to sing before the Ark of the Covenant, but they're contemplating a very difficult struggle that they're both facing, and I imagine that this is a problem that you faced as well. Have you ever had a circumstance that was so overwhelming? You were crying out to God, you were praying about it, but it seemed that God wasn't answering your prayer. He seemed far away. The problem that you're dealing with was probably consuming. It was consuming your every thought. It was keeping you up at night. I've been there. I've been there recently, and I felt like God wasn't listening to me. that my prayers, my concern, the thing that seemed to be unraveling my world that was so important to me, it wasn't important to God? That was a hard thing to process. That's a hard thing to contemplate. And in today's message, Psalm 77, we'll hear from the psalmist as they express a similar concern. But are we right? Does God care, especially when he doesn't answer? Or is our focus misplaced? Here is Colin Smith with a closer look at Psalm 77.
This happened to me this week. There are times when you know what's happening, when you see what's coming, and you stand there like the deer in the middle of the road, you know, watching the headlights come at you with those big eyes, just kind of frozen. Well, we do that sometimes. We see it coming, and we stand there and we stare it in the face until we get run over. But he says, here's my problem. He says, it's not as if I didn't try. It's not like I didn't ask God to help me. I cried out with my voice. I cried, and he says, it's not as if God didn't listen either. You know, there's sometimes when we can't find God, it's not because he's not right by. And we know this fact. We know what's going on in our lives. We see it happening. We say, God, help me. But nothing happens the way we want it to happen. And he says, in the day of my trouble, I sought the Lord. Isn't that what we tell people to do? When you've got trouble, go to God. Take it to God. And our songs make it sound so easy. You know, take it to the cross and leave it there. Hardest thing in the world is to go to God in prayer and to leave it there. Most of the time, we spend our time tying our problems closer to our back so we can carry them better. So we go to the cross, but not before we've tied those burdens so tight to ourselves. By the time we get to the cross, we can't get rid of them. We go to God and say, I want the help. But inside of us, we don't want what God offers. We'd rather hold on to our problems, and what it is, in my case, it was anger. You know, it's easy to be angry, and it's hard to be humble. I remembered God and was troubled. I complained, and my spirit was overwhelmed. You can't see it in the English Bible, but this phrase is here three times in the psalm, and it's the key phrase in this psalm. It's a pattern. The Bible says that how sin develops within you in James chapter 1 and how faith develops in you in James chapter, the end of James, it's the same thing. Both of them happen. They're just different directions. We call it attitude. Attitude is what direction you're facing. Well, when you're going through a problem, the same process leads you into sin or leads you into God. It's just which way do you choose to do? Here's the process. It starts with what you think about, what you remember. See, he remembers what's going on in his life and what God has done, but it bothers him. Why has God left me here? How come God's not solving my problem? Why isn't God doing it for me? And it troubles him. We have such a great memory. I know people who say they can't memorize a verse and who can tell you something that happened to them 20 years ago in vivid detail. And you know what? You remember what's important to you. And he remembers God, and it troubles him. Why did you do this to me? Notice what he says, I complained. Please circle that word. It is the exact same word as in verse 6, I meditated. I call to remembrance and I meditate. It's the same process. One is with your face turned towards sin. The other is with your face turned towards God. Your memory dredges these things up, and the word complain. You know what that's the word is? It's the Hebrew word that means to go over it and over it and over it. Notice what he says. Here's the symptoms of it. You hold my eyelids open. You keep me awake. I can't sleep. I can't think about it. I can't get the peace that I need. And I'm so troubled I can't talk. I'm withdrawn. I don't want to deal with it. I don't want to think about it. Here's the answer. Notice in verse 5, I have considered the days of old, the years of ancient times. And again, here are the same two processes we saw before. I remember my song in the night. I meditate within my heart. Same word up above as muse. It means to chew over something, to ruminate, except you're chewing over the good things. So verse 7 down through 11, he talks about what he remembered. What were the things that he brought to mind? Look, will the Lord cast off forever? Will he be favorable no more? Has his mercy ceased forever? He said, then I remembered what kind of God I was dealing with. Yeah, I'm in trouble. Yeah, God doesn't seem to be very near, but what kind of God do I have? Do I have the kind of God who leaves me in this circumstance? When you have a problem with God, you've probably failed to understand the quality of your relationship with him. Your mind isn't on who he is. How can I take my eyes off it for a minute? What is our problem? Well, I'll tell you, our first problem is we don't remember God's character. We're dealing with a God who he'll never cast us off forever. He will never cease in his favor towards us. He can't do it. The Bible says he can never deny himself, and he's made me part of himself. It says, has his promise failed? Have you actually accused God of failing in his promises to you? Can God's promise fail? Remember the promises he made you. I'm looking at what I don't think he did for me. You didn't do this, and you didn't give me this, and why did you stick me here? Well, how about taking God at what he promised to do, not what I ask him to do? And we rate God on a scale of our expectations instead of putting him and holding him to his promises and saying, he always keeps his promises. And in fact, has God forgotten to be gracious? In his anger, has he shut up his tender mercies? That word forgotten, by the way, is there for a point. It's to be an absolute opposite of the word remember. I'm to remember that God can't forget. All right? That's what he's saying. Can God forget to be gracious and mercy? Impossible. I must be seeing things wrong. Something is impossible here. Then I said, notice, this is my anguish, is what the King James says. You know what the Hebrew says? It's my problem. This is my problem, is what he says. I said, hold it. God isn't that way. It must be my problem. He says, I remember God's character and things are right. It must be my problem. Therefore, I will remember the years of the right hand of the Most High. The right hand is where the person sits who's on God's favor. The person who God shows is, that's where Jesus Christ is now, sitting at the right hand of God. He says, I'm going to remember the ways that God has privileged me and the things he's given to me. You start by remembering the character of God and the works of God, and then you meditate on the right things. Same process, remember and meditate, but notice, I will also meditate on all your work. He says, I'm going to chew that over. Instead of chewing over all of these things, I'm going to chew on the things that you're doing. I'm going to look at your ways. And then he says, your way, O God, is in the sanctuary. Who is so great as our God? You talk about God. And then notice, you are the God who does wonders. You talk to God. Don't just talk about him. You tell him and you talk to him. You know, I learned these lessons the hard way. But if it isn't well with your soul today, you look at this passage and you tell me if maybe there's not a reason for it. I had to. And God just turns you around, and it's an attitude problem. An attitude is something you can change.
What are the things that keep you up at night? What are the things that really prevent you from finding the rest and getting a full night's sleep? I've had those issues, and I'm sure that you have as well. Things that seem so pressing, so important, that you can't put them aside. They are consuming your life and consuming your rest. It's interesting because we spend our whole day taking in information that's often very troubling, and then we go to bed at night and that just sits with us. We consume it, we hold on to it, we embrace it and try to fix it ourselves, and we simply can't do it. Now, the world will tell you to distract yourself, try to focus on something else. I'll tell you, count sheep. That's a way of kind of letting your mind focus on something different, and maybe you'll find yourself asleep if you just kind of take your mind off of your troubles. But I suggest that there's something better to do. Instead of counting sheep, count your blessings. Remember all of the ways in which God has blessed you in the past. Count those blessings one by one, because here's the truth. If all you do is ignore your problems, guess what's going to be there in the morning? That same exact problem. But if you teach your heart and you speak to your heart the faithfulness of God, you remind yourself that despite the circumstances that you're currently facing, you've faced other experiences where God has brought you through and you've been safe and you've been secure. God has proven himself faithful in the past. He will prove himself faithful again. That actually addresses your problem, and that will help you not only to sleep, but to wake up with a new perspective. What do I always tell you? Preach the gospel to yourselves. Tell yourselves the wonderful truths of who God is and what he has done, not just through his word, but personally in your life. Where have you seen God at work? And where have you seen him bring blessings in your life? I hope that this encourages you, and I hope that it inspires you to go back and read Psalm 77 on your own, and in doing that, to really see it as a prayer that you can pray to God. If we have been an encouragement, we would love to hear from you. This ministry is 100% supported by listeners like you. And one of the ways that I get troubled, one of the ways that I am anxious or worried is wondering how we're going to pay our bills here as a nonprofit ministry. But God has been faithful. I've been doing this for over 10 years, and God has always been faithful. And he shows that through people just like yourself. So where I might lose sleep, I got to be reminded that God has been faithful in the past, and I'm sure he'll be faithful again. Will you consider being a supporter of the Songtime Ministry? You can send in your donation to Songtime Radio, P.O. Box 100, Barnstable, Massachusetts, 02630, or give us a call. It's 508-362-7070. You can also head over to our website at songtime.com or look us up on social media. On behalf of everyone here at Songtime and our late founder, Dr. John DeBrine, who has always encouraged you to grow in grace so that you won't groan in disgrace, we want to thank you for listening. From Cape Cod, I'm Adam Miller with our theme verse, Psalm 85, 4 and 7. Restore us again, O God of our salvation, and put away your indignation toward us. Show us your steadfast love, O Lord, and grant us your salvation.